by me and he says, are you married? I said, you know I'm married. You know I got married last year. He said, you got any children? I said, no. He said, what's the matter? Don't you like children? You just walk around. And Billy and Jimmy, the twins, you know, Clark Griffith adopted the 9 children from his sister. Their name were Robinson. Thelma, she was making out my contract, and Jimmy was at one hook of shoulder, and the other fellow was, and Billy was attached to him. But they learned the business all the way. They helped pull tarpaulins and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And one was in charge of the hospitality room up there in Minnesota. Best food in the league. And the other fellow was in charge of the concessions. And by the way, it just came to my mind that Connie Mack and Griff were great friends. And they're sitting down in the box seat in Shy Park. And I don't know which one beckoned the fellow that's selling lemonade. And they were charging 10 cents for a cup. So Griff said to Connie Mack, he says, how do you make your lemonade? And he told him, he said, oh, you shouldn't do it that way. You should make it in a big tub. Fill them all, charge 10 cents. He said, it'll cost you maybe a half a penny to make a cup full, and you'll get 9.5 cent profit. Yeah. Well, of course, I've been in the game a long time. I don't know anything else but baseball. Mm-hmm. It's a great game.
What was it like traveling in the minor leagues in the 30s, late 20s?
Not too bad. These riders blow things up. Now, in the Western League, we travel by train. Mm-hmm. Let your window open. Hot day, and of course, the train is traveling, and it cools off. And in the morning, you get up, you take the blanket you had on, and you throw it off. All the cinders that came from the locomotive.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Blankenship boys? 2 pitchers for the White Sox?
Yeah.
They were on our club at St. Joe. Sit in the men's room with us. Have the zither out. I'm telling you. I'm telling you, bro. Yeah, there's a lot of stories to be told. Do you remember a fellow named the Walter Shaner? Played for the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And he hit a lot of 2 base hits. I was rooming with him. And we were going from St. Joe to Wichita. And it was the last series, and they allowed everybody to drive their own car. And in those days, they would say to you, how much room you got in your grip? And you're tickled to death to have the old timers talk to you, you know. Okay. And before we leave, I'll give you a gallon of liquor. The moonshine days, in those days. And you took and put it in your grip. If you got caught with it, it'd be, I don't know how many days.
Mm-hmm.
So, police stopped us. Shaner had a Virginia license. He lived in Virginia. There was 3 of us in his car. And, of course, we had some bats, and we had to catch them, kicking some balls. Policeman stopped us. Where are you going, Noel? I was saying, Jimmy, Christmas, you know, you're my father and mother and sister, and I'm in jail in Wichita. Holy crap. Well, we talked to the policeman, and we showed him bats and balls, and that way baseball players. And in those days, the cars had a pocket on the door.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a had a gallon of liquor there in a flat bottle. If he'd looked in there, he'd seen it. And Wichita was really dry in those days. It was really dry. But he left the school. He didn't search the car or anything. You want a baseball or two? Yeah, well, yeah, I got a couple of kids. Drop them on the ground. Oh, we dropped them on the ground. We didn't want to take them. Then, you know, somebody saw him take them.
One of our committee members visited, talked to Walter Shaner recently.
Yeah.
He's in Las Vegas.
Oh, is he in Las Vegas?
He's about 92, 93 years old.
Let me tell you a story about Walter Shaner. I'm rooming with him, and we're in the Miles Standish Hotel in Denver. And just about a block and a half, two blocks, there was a fruit and vegetable stand. In those days, if you got the big orange or something, boy, that was just like getting a $10 bill. So he said, let's go down to the fruit market and pick up some fruit and bring it back to the room. So we went over there, and Jack Dempsey and Monty Blue, I don't know if you remember Monty Blue, the actor, they were putting on a stage act in Denver. And we went into this place, and one or two of the people that worked there, clerks, they said, "There's Jack Dempsey," meaning Walter Shaner. Big, strong guy, a big chin. So they got around him, "Jack, give us your autograph." They thought he was Jack Dempsey. And I walked up right in front of Walter, and I said, "Jack," I said, "why the hell don't you give him the autograph?" I said, "what are you stalling for?" And then I walked away. And let me tell you, they almost stopped him. They almost ran over him.
Do you think the air hasn't changed? It's gotten dirtier in Denver, but it hasn't changed. It's as high as it ever was. Was it harder to throw a curveball, a knuckleball in Denver?
I hit the right center field fence several times in Denver, and I didn't have any more power.
Yeah. Is that going to be difficult for pitchers to cope with?
Well, I think it was a
be difficult for pitchers to cope with?
Well, I think it was a, be a change, some type of change that I can make. I played in Denver when they pushed the snow on the side and it was that high. Beyond the foul lines. But the day was beautiful day. You know, the day like maybe 52, 55.
I remember playing in Albuquerque in the Texas League. You know, Albuquerque is pretty high up.
Yeah, that's high up, isn't it?
Yeah, and the pitchers did have trouble throwing the curveball.
You ought to have Marty.
What are they going to do when they go into Denver to play?
I don't know. Well, I mean, pitchers, they'll figure out a way to try to get a job.
I don't know. I was going to ask.
Yeah. But it's usually... Salt Lake City, areas where...
We used to go over there and eat breakfast.
You know, the ball really carries. You know, the...
Well, he's right. It'll be very interesting to have Major League ball in that high altitude.
Yeah, but the...
You know, worse.
Talent is going to be, it all comes down to
if you're going to win or lose, you know what I mean? When they
talent
get on the road,
even more.
Even out a little bit.
It's the Denver club that's going to have to play half their game there.
Right, but then the other teams that come into town have to play there too.
Yeah.
So they're not used to playing there. So at least if you're the home team there and you know how to play according to your ballpark, at least you got a chance of winning. Same as what the Giants have done in Candlestick. That is. I've never been there for a game, but I heard it is brutal. Mm-hmm. You know, the wind just whips there, and it's just it's really bad. And, you know, Roger Craig came into the situation. The Giants were always a sinking ship. Nobody wanted to play there. The players couldn't stand playing there, and he used it to his advantage. He said, "Hey, you know, this is our ballpark. You know, people are going to come into our park. They're not going to want to play."
Yeah.
And you know, he took a negative and made it into a positive. And the same thing I would think would be with the Denver ballpark. Okay, so the balls fly out of the place. Okay, fine. But how are we going to win, you know, with knowing that? Okay, we build our ball club a certain way. to try to, you know, make it to our advantage to have that type of ballpark.
Atlanta is supposed to be a launching pad too, and so
Kansas City Royals. When you just drive from scouting, I know that they just constantly looking for speed.
That's right.
Seeing it's better.
Yeah, Cardinals same way.
Plan your trip if you go to Florida. Plan it so you go right through town.
So.
Not in the rush hour.
The Phillies, say that. Kind of during the rush hour, you want to take the bypass.
Well, I wouldn't think of that. 22 miles.
I've done it a number of times, and that's the way I've done it.
You never think it's going to end up like that.
Well, I've had times when I thought the traffic was never going to end through downtown Atlanta, too.
You know, nowadays, those teams aren't supposed to win.
But we used to go every fall. This is the first fall that I haven't gone because I'm going to help some kids go to college. But we always stopped at Manchester, Tennessee.
I know where that is. Sure.
It's about a little over 500 miles. And then the next stop would be in Lake City, Florida. But yeah, we'd go through Atlanta. Because we'd be there when the rush hour was over.
Well, then you've driven very near where my real home is, which is Gainesville, Florida.
Gainesville, yeah.
Yeah, that's just south of Lake City.
What school?
The University of Florida.
Florida. We drafted a fellow named John Burke, wasn't it? The first round, June 91.
I don't even know
who
you guys
took from. Well, he wanted so much money, and there had to be a stop. Had to be a cap somewhere. And he didn't sign. He went back to Florida. And the other day, he broke his leg.
Found any cap yet.
You've done it, and I've done it. We walk down a street, like in a residential area, and a tree would be hanging over, and you'd jump up and hit the branch. That's what he did when he came down. $500,000 gone down the drain. You see, we can't sign a fella after he enters a four-year school. One day we can't sign him. Rule. But I guess they're changing that now, aren't they, Marty?
Well, it's not in place yet. They're going to make a decision the first week of March.
Well, the information I got, he'll always be the property of
if it goes through.
Drafty.
We just had meetings about 2 weeks ago, and they told us that, just what you're saying, that if a team drafts a player, they only have the rights to that player for the next 4 or 5 years. And, but it's not in place yet.
I don't think they'll stand on the court.
Well, see, that's one of the things they talked about. The owners talked about that if it will or it won't.
Let me ask you something. Who's going to challenge it?
In this age of litigation, the players' union, if they don't like it, they'll challenge. Can I ask you this?
NHL
have a similar type of thing where if they draft a player, the team has the sole rights to that player?
Hockey?
Yeah. I think the only way that the draft was, the basis on which the draft was instituted and without any legal worry was the fact that the guy was free to sign with somebody else if he didn't go with the team that drafted him a year later. They'd have jumped on it immediately.
He has to sign the consent slip, the redraft slip, that we have the same rights as the other 25 clubs.
Okay, but he is essentially free. Because he's not automatically held by the first team that drafts him.
He is in junior college, but not in four-year college. And now the way this new legislation went through, we can't sign a guy until he finishes his second year in junior college.
Okay.
Yeah.
But to say that a team that drafts him has the rights to him for 5 years,
I don't see how
he'll ever stand up.
Yeah.
Well, that's why, like they told us, they said they didn't know if it was going to go through or not. And my boss, our scouting director, he told us that he did not think that they would go for the proposal. So they just leave it as it is right now.
Now, you with the Oakland A's organization,
right.
Did you say? Are you also Mr. Millies?
No, I'm with Walters, the first name. I'm with Houston.
Oh. So I see.
I want to know what it was like to play for teams losing over 100 games a year for 2 years in a row.
Well, you'd come off the field and you'd throw your glove in the locker and you'd say, we'll get them tomorrow.
You never get down.
You never give it, you never give them either.
No. But you keep saying it.
Yeah. The Phillies, when I joined the Phillies, they had Hollingsworth, Al Hollingsworth, left-hand pitcher. They had Claude Passoff. They had Max Butcher. They had Kirby Higbee. Just take those three fouls, what they'd be worth today.
Numokaji?
That's right. I forgot about him. We had five good pitchers, and they traded them all off. You walk into Mr. Nugent, who owned the club, you walk in to talk to him about money and everything, you'd come out there and you'd say, again, I made a good deal. Pick up the paper in the morning where he made a deal, and you'd say, I didn't make a good deal.
Yeah. Well, you probably played for three of the poorest, financially poorest teams. Griffith had no money, and Nugent certainly had no money.
Yeah.
Nugent had to sell those guys to go to spring training.
Remember Doc Prostrom?
Mm-hmm.
He was the manager. He had Doc was from Memphis. He was part owner of the Memphis club at one time. He was a manager. His son was a coach at San Diego in the football league, National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Nugent needed some money. So the fellow that owned the Coca-Cola outfit in Memphis loaned him $200 or $250 one year. And that's how Doc got a 3-year contract. Doc was lost. He was lost in the big leagues. You ever been in Florida to the dog track?
Mm-hmm.
What do they holler when the rabbit goes off?
I've never been to a dog track. I
Here
don't know.
Comes Rusty.
Yeah, okay.
That was our... That was our squeeze play. Everybody laughed like hell. He's the boss. Here comes Rusty. You remember Walter Berger?
Wally Berger?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty good home run hitter.
Mm-hmm.
He was with Boston. Well, at the end of his career, he joined the Phillies. And we were playing Pittsburgh. And the score was tied, nothing to nothing in the ninth. And Berger was sitting on a bench, and Doc looked over and he says, Boyger, get your bat. He says, can you bunt? Berger says, I've been a home run hitter all my life. He says, Joe Marty, get your bat. You remember we traded for Joe Marty? He said, Joe Marty, get your bat. Joe singled politely to center field and won a ball and ran nothing. But can you manage, big league manager, says to the guy, he says, can you bunt? And there was nobody out. I'll tell you another good story. You'll laugh. It's a stinking story. It's not on here, eh?
If you want me to turn it off, I will.
Yeah, I'll turn it off.
All right.
Anyway. Named Boom Boom Beck.
Oh, yeah, Walter Beck?
Yeah.
He was sold from Memphis for $25,000 at that time to the Dodgers. He was holding out for part of the purchase price, and he never got a penny. I caught him, only caught those two fellas when I was with Brooklyn. Fellow from, what the hell was the guy? Knuckleball pitcher. From Illinois.
Dutch Leonard.
Yeah, Dutch Leonard and Beck. You see how they can test a catcher. You're in the lineup. You don't know who's pitching. But Dutch Leonard was a hell of a knuckleball pitcher, and I handled him. Casey says, you know, I don't know, did you ever meet Casey?
I've seen him in action.
When he took the floor, boy, nobody else took the floor. And he wasn't loud, but he talked all the time. He said, hey, kid from Chicago, he says, you handle that kid pretty good. I said to him, I said, that's what you brought me up here for. In the conversation. But, and then Walter Beck came to me and he says, you're catching. See, he knew me from Chicago and I knew Walter from Decatur.
Mm-hmm.
He said, did you ever chew licorice? I said, no. He said, you're chewing it today. I was chewing it. I tell you, my rectum was so sore, it was really funny. We won 11-2 or something like that. That was the year Tom Zachary had a hell of a year. He won 13. You remember Tom Zachary one time?
Mm-hmm.
He used to be with the Yankees.
He used to be with Washington.
Either Washington.
Brooklyn. He went to Brooklyn also.
Yeah, well, at the end, when I was there. Yeah.
He's the guy that gave up the 60th home run to Babe Ruth.
Right. That's probably how he's best remembered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like Tracy Sauer.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Now, one of the things that Griffith did that was, I think, way ahead of his time was bringing up Latin American players.
Estalella. Bobby Estalella. And he was kind of ostracized because he... the people who live with we used to play against those fellas in the fall when it was barnstorm.
Well, in particular,
there's a lot of good players.
I was looking at Mel Almeida.
He was there after me.
Oh, yeah. All right.
They had a fellow by the name of, what the hell was his name? He was a Cuban scout and he had a laundry in Baltimore. Joe.
Yeah, Cantillon. Cantillon?
No. But anyway, Griff needed a tarpaulin. And he priced it. They wanted either $10,000 or $12,000 for him. And he told Joe that. Joe says, "Griff, don't worry about it. I'll make you one." Made him one for $1,500. Yeah. He was. He had a chauffeur. I remember he walked in with a ball player in Chattanooga in '35. And he gave a show for 50 cents to go out and eat. That was it. Yeah.
Lifestyle of the rich and famous.
Yeah. Oh, they...
I've heard some bizarre stories about Kirby Higbee, too.
Oh, yeah, Kirby.
Was he the best pitcher on the Phillies in those
years?
Well,
I don't know. I thought Claude Passo was, and you traded him with the Cubs.
Yeah.
You know? The way he got traded was Doc pinch hit for him, and he had that bad hand. They had to cut the hand to straighten fingers. So he took the bat and he threw it up against the grandstand. 2 days he was gone. Traded him. Claude Passo. And I can remember hitting against him in the Mid-Atlantic League. when he couldn't hit the batting cage when he threw batting practice. And he was that wild. Went out to the big leagues and he won 20. Boy, he had good stuff. He was the type that would try to beat you. And now they have, in those days they had a knockdown sign. Each sign was that.
Mm-hmm.
If your pitcher wouldn't knock you down, if your pitcher wouldn't knock you down, why, you'd go out and get the pitcher. You'd let them know that you were back there. And Buck Newsom wasn't very aggressive to knock too many guys down. I'd go out there and tell them, I'd get something, out here in my ass. Then I'd walk away. Because if he caught up with me, Katie barred the door.
Well, Whit Wyatt said he used to find $200 or $300 on top of his locker after he knocked the right batters down for DeRocher. Was there any money passed around in the Phillies or the Senators
for
doing that?
Never heard of it. You're the first fellow I ever heard say
they didn't have any money.
Well, yeah, that would do it too. Yeah. Larry McPhail wasn't slow to spend money, I guess. There are a couple names on the teams that you played for that I don't really know anything about, and I thought maybe you could help me out. I don't know much about Maury Arnovich. Can you tell me about him?
Maury was from Superior, Wisconsin. Yeah, Maury led the league one year. I think in 1939, he led the league. And they were
in
reluctant.
What? In batting or what category?
And they were reluctant to trade him to Cincinnati. They were making a great pitch for him. But they traded him the next year. And when Maury was with the Phillies, he sold fishing equipment up in Superior. I managed in Superior. We won everything up there. Fortunately, was the first one to win a pennant in the White Sox organization. And they gave Maury a day in Philadelphia. His father came in, his brother came in. And they gave him an umbrella, hunting jacket, hip boots, fishing pole. And they asked the father to say something over the PA system. And this is exactly what the father said. He said, I got two boys. One is a good boy. He says, Jaime, he says, he can't even paint the house right. He says, but Maury's a good boy. So they went to work, and we came in the clubhouse with all his gifts. You don't carry him in that boy and everybody. They couldn't find Heine Mueller, the infielder. He could pull anybody. They used to pitch him inside with him, pull two strikes, and they'd work on him. But anyway, Heine's in the shower. They heard the shower. Here he's got the boots on, he's got the jacket on, he's got the hat on, and he's got the umbrella and his fishing pole. The boots were filled with water. Did you ever hear about Stengel having a bird under his hat?
Yeah.
Did you ever hear this story?
When were you in Superior?
You had a couple of stories about DeRocher, didn't you? Didn't you play with DeRocher or something?
Against him. You know, DeRocher stole Baker's watch, you know that, don't you?
Heard the story.
Well, in Ebbets Field, the dugouts were kind of close. See, there were no bleachers in right field. The abutment went up and up the concrete. The reason I say that is the dugouts are quite close. I went to the Dodgers when St. Louis had left the Dodgers. They were going to New York. See, and whenever anybody played New York, you stayed at the New Yorker. and the businessmen got after the clubs to get the business over at the Bosser's Hotel in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the umpire, if the fans thought the umpire made a mistake, they'd holler, Lippy, Lippy, here comes Lippy. And then when he'd come back to the bench, we'd holler over and say, hey, Lippy, what time is it? But he was a good baseball man.
Yeah.
And he was a real showboat. He knew what to do. Yeah. And we went into New York. Oh, yeah. I was going to say, Dizzy Dean pitched a one-hitter the day before I got there. They're playing a double-hitter. And Paul Dean pitched a no-hitter. And Dizzy, oh, it was hot. It was real hot that day. And he built a fire in front of the dugout. What are you going to do? You can't find a guy that's winning 20 every year. You know.
Why don't you find us a few characters like that? They could use them these days.
Yeah, really.
I got some characters, but they don't win any.
So we went to New York. And the Giants and the Cardinals will tie. And do you remember Phil Weintraub from Chicago here? Good hitter. He hit 350 and they sent him out. He couldn't feel. He'd try to pick up a ball, he'd kick it before he got to pick it up.
He was a Smee Jolly of the infield.
So the Polo Grounds were, the home club was up here. You walk up the stairs and the visitors were here. And by the way, Oscar Levant would come up, and the pianist, he'd come up there, and we'd all say, what, no autographs, Oscar? Tallulah Bankhead used to come out to the game. She knew everybody. She knew every ballplayer's first name. Her father was either senator or House representative out of Mississippi, wasn't it?
Yeah, the senator from the South, somewhere.
Yeah, Georgia, I think.
Somewhere
one there. But she was out to a lot of ball games. And she'd always cheer for the visiting club at something. But anyway, Phil Weintraub, they came down, and Joe Bowman was there. I remember Bill Carey was a manager. And they were dejected. And Phil had just joined the Giants. And we were all like Bill Prince and myself and Phil Weintraub and Jimmy, I forget what his name was, but he was from St. Rita. You know, there's young guys here and new ones. I hollered over to Phil. I said, hey, you Jew son of a bitch. I said, you carried my bag the first year I went away. Now he wouldn't say hello to me. So I screamed at him, see? Casey liked that. See, and they had toilets on the end of the bench. But they, oh boy. And then there was a porthole.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny Rizzo was traded from, he was with Cincinnati. They traded Arnovich to him. And Casey would look out of that porthole and he'd holler out, there's a guy through two World Series chairs down the shit house. And he'd duck down so we couldn't see him. You haven't gotten near the care. Well, I think the media and the game, well, not only baseball, but every sport is marketed better today, much better. I can remember walking into the Dodger in Ebbets Field, and they had music in right field coming in towards home plate. Everybody's looking at one another. Music in the ballpark. It was unheard of. Yeah, very much.
Except the Dodger Symphony, if you want to call that music.
Larry McPhail was the, he and two or three others tried to kidnap the Kaiser in the First World War.
Yeah. Has the ashtray to prove it. What kind of crowds did you have in Washington and Philadelphia?
Well, we drew more in 1936 than we in 1933. That's the only thing I can tell you. You'd have to find out.
Not much.
But the Yankees were a big draw. They're a big draw.
Were the fans in Philadelphia really hard on you, or what?
Well, if we had 17, 15, 20,000, we'd have a big crowd. We brought in a pitcher by the name of from Hickory, North Carolina. The name was Charlie Fry. And me being a guy that I was not a nightclub man or anything like that, I had a lot of fun. But I had a beer once in a while. But I tried to preserve my strength because I wasn't a big guy. And I was always the guy, the new guy in the room with me. I didn't like it, but I wanted to stay in the major leagues, too. So this kid was up there, and Cy Johnson. You know Cy Johnson? He lives in Sheridan.
He's going to see him.
I am?
I don't have a set yet.
Okay.
I got his name and address.
Okay.
Nice guy.
So he's going to be on your list.
Cy and I, we played at Moline, Illinois. We went through the Navy together, and we played at Philadelphia together. I don't know if his wife is still living. She was sickly. But I stopped there about 6 years ago. Sheridan's about 70 miles or something like that. But anyway, so I told his Fry, he's sitting at the window. Never saw a big city. Sitting at the window. And I said, Charlie, why don't you come down and eat with us? See, in those days you signed checks. You can eat as much as you want, but you sign a check. And that's the way they could check up on you if you were out at night. You had to be out of the dining room at 10 o'clock in the morning. If you didn't sign a check, you were out. That was all. And I said, why don't you come down and eat with us? No, I said, I want to stay here. So we stayed up there. And they used to have the eyes and ears of the world, newsreel. I like that. I like the news. Keeps you up to date. So Cy and I went there. We come back about 11, between 11 and 11:30. So I got up in the room, and Charlie's still at the window. And I said, hey, Charlie, did you have something to eat? He said, no. He said they wanted to send it up on some kind of a cart, and I wouldn't allow them to, a la carte. They wouldn't. So I got the bellboy to bring up the menu. And here, and I want you to order what you want to eat. So I fed him that. Otherwise, the guy probably would have gone hungry. And then I got this. I had a beautiful top coat, tailor-made for $35-$40. You could get a hell of a suit in those days. And I had this greenish-gray, slash pockets, raglan sleeve. Oh, it was a beautiful piece of goods. But after I wore it, it didn't fit me. Something about here, they could press it. Pull it back and say, look at it. Turn on the green light. The man wants a green suit. So I had this top gun. I wore it that winter. And came in the spring and I had the coat. And he's Charlie, he was still with us. And he said, that's a good looking coat. I said, yeah, don't fit me. Look at here. He said, I'll buy it from you.